This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Place to Be Nation, and welcome to this special presentation brought to you by PlaceToBeNation.com and the Place to Be Pop Feed. My name is Scott Criscolo. Happy Halloween, because if you're listening to this show, the day it's up, it is Halloween. What a great month it's been here on the Pop Feed. Plenty of spooky horror stuff, pod blasts, podcasts, written stuff, etc., etc. But we cap it off with a podcast that I've been looking forward to doing for months, since I kind of got it in my head. I'm going to open up with a simple question. What is the most popular movie genre in America? Seems like an easy question, right? Probably not. We could think of war movies or dramas or, quote, rom-coms or regular comedies or fantasy or sci-fi. We'll get into a little bit of sci-fi tonight as well. But undoubtedly, one of the most popular, yet one of the most probably maligned genres in the history of American cinema is horror. Either you absolutely love it, or you absolutely hate it. And tonight, here on this special presentation, we're going to kind of go through the kind of the timeline of horror in American cinema, or North American cinema. I guess we can count Canada too, and I suppose Mexico. Because here in the United States, horror has had its ebbs and flows. It started off really hot in the 30s and 40s, even into the 50s, dipped off. Europe took over in the 60s, early 70s, came back in the 70s a little bit, owned the 80s. 80s is probably, and my guest may agree or disagree, the best decade of horror. Then the 90s, it tailed a bit in the early 90s, came back in the late 90s, and now has fairly leveled out. And then, of course, there's plenty of subgenres of horror. You could be a bloody slasher fan. You could be a Satan devil fan. You could be a haunted house fan, a ghost fan. You could be a erotic cannibalism fan. It all depends on your point of view, all your tastes. But I am not doing this alone. I was very selective in who I chose to join me on this journey tonight. Somebody who, like me, really will watch anything. Gory, weird, dull, doesn't matter. Because there's levels of horror fans. There's the ones that watch the stuff everybody watches, and then there's the stuff that some people avoid. Let me bring her in. She is the purveyor of the not scary, but incredibly awesome podcast feed, The Jenny Position, of which I am honored to be an early part of. She is also the co-host of three shows on our Place to Be on the other side of the hallway that I'm on a lot as well, our Place to Be wrestling feed. She's the host of Jenny and the Gems. She is the co-host of the Extreme Three-Way Dance, the co-host of Talkin' WCW. She is the resident scream queen, Jennifer Smith.
Hi. Thank you for having me. I think that from now on, I'll only be referred to as booty meat. Because I was under the impression that we were here tonight to talk exclusively booty meat.
Booty meat. Hashtag ass bacon. I know. It would have been a tremendous 3-hour pod with multiple parts.
On a 15-minute movie.
Yeah, a 15-minute movie. We're gonna take a right-hand turn for a moment. For all of you out there that will, like Jenny and I, literally will watch anything, go to Amazon Prime or Amazon Video and type in booty meat, like booty, like shake your, and meat, like non-vegan meat. Booty meat. It is literally 15 minutes, and we'll just leave it at that.
You won't regret it. There's nothing else you could do in 15 minutes that's better than watching that.
That is absolutely true. I agree with you 1,000%. Enjoy it. I swear to you, enjoy it. What do you think is the most popular, in your opinion? And I value your pop culture opinion. You have tremendous shows on your feed that talk about this. Of course, you and your girl Miranda and the great Geek and Sassy, and you and Tim on Talk and Pop. What do you think is the most popular right now, 2019, most popular genre in American movies?
I mean, it's got to be superheroes, right?
Right, probably.
Nothing makes money like those.
It's true.
Yeah, I mean, over the past 10 years, I think that superhero is king at the box office. You know, and we might see some tapering off of that, but considering, you know, we're at a weird sort of stage at Marvel and DC, really, but yeah, right now, superhero is king.
It is. You're right. You know, sci-fi, which is kind of where superhero sort of goes, not really, but it's kind of, they kind of go hand in hand to a certain extent. But you're right. Obviously, the Marvel Cinematic Universe is not in limbo, but they've leveled out with the Infinity War ending, the Infinity Saga, I should say, ending. Sci-fi will take a dip in a couple of months when Episode 9 comes out of Star Wars, and then that'll kind of level out. And then it'll be more of a level playing field in terms of which genre will take over. But horror is always there, and it had its ebbs and flows. We had a dip in the 60s into the early 70s. We had a dip in the early to mid 90s and then made a renaissance in the late 90s. And then kind of since the 2000s is, I would say it's been baseline based on the subgenre. And we're going to get into different subgenres tonight as well. But let's begin at the beginning. Now, before, like in the silent picture era, there was a couple of things here and there. There was a silent movie called The Wolfman. There were some vampire ones. There was kind of a very rough Frankenstein, but it didn't really use the word Frankenstein. It was kind of the monster. Probably the first well-known popular horror movie in the public eye was probably Nosferatu, which came out in 1922, which is, you know, for those that may not know the movie, you've seen the visual of the creepy guy with the big nose and the bald head and the long, creepy arms and the creepy hands. He was a vampire. It wasn't Dracula. That wouldn't come till later. He was just a vampire. By the way, Werner Herzog, great German director, did a killer remake of it in 1979. It's on, the original is not on Shudder. Of course, for those of you that are listening, I'm sure you all have Shudder. It's, if you don't, then what the fuck? The original's not on Shudder. The remake is.
I've seen that recently.
Yeah, that's a great... Klaus Kinski's a creepy fuck.
It actually holds up, like, surprisingly well.
I agree 100%. It's got that, and we'll delve into that briefly. It's got that European, weird, kind of kooky, kind of off-the-beaten-path kind of way that the Germans and the Italians did horror in the 60s and early 70s. But it's great. Check it out on Shudder. The original, I don't know where you can find it. I mean, I guess you can get it on Blu-ray, but there's always been legal issues with the original Nosferatu. But there were some other movies. The Science of Dr. Caligari. There was The Hunchback of Notre Dame, which I never thought was a horror movie, but I guess it was considered one back then in the 20s. Mm-hmm. There was the original Phantom of the Opera. Which is, of course, the one, you know, where you see his creepy face and he's got no nose and it's the eyes and the... which, by the way,
was creepy. Do you find that scary at all, Phantom of the Opera? It's more tragic to me.
Oh, it's incredibly tragic. I mean, his face is fucking scary, but is the story scary? Like, I just watched the remake recently. Universal did a remake in 1943 with Claude Rains. I just watched it recently in my Universal horror collection. And yeah, I mean, I really wouldn't consider it a horror movie. It's more of a romantic tragedy.
Yeah, a little bit.
Just because his face is scarred, that's horror?
Right.
I don't know. I never thought The Invisible Man was horror either, but I talked
maybe
about
that. Maybe in the 1925 zeitgeist, it was.
Yeah, probably.
It was not scary.
Yeah, a lot of shit scared people in 1925. Yeah,
like 100 years ago.
Yeah, exactly. So there were some examples of horror in the 20s, but clearly, probably the beginning of the first golden age of horror was 1931 when Universal Pictures, led by the Lemley family, released on Valentine's Day, which I think is fucking hilarious, Dracula with Bela Lugosi, which was based not only on Bram Stoker's book, but it was a Broadway play that Bela Lugosi was in. That's why he was cast. Still holds up. I watched it recently. Mm-hmm. Is it scary? I guess it depends on your point of view. It uses a lot of what I love about the Universal Pictures is that obviously they're all in black and white, except the Phantom of the Opera remake was in color. I don't know if that really meant anything, but shadows and music and dialogue. Like, we didn't need blood and guts. I mean, trust me, and I love blood and guts, but who doesn't? But sometimes you don't need it. And Universal, obviously black and white, you couldn't really tell, but it rarely used it.
Didn't they have some sort of film code back then, too?
I mean,
it's not like they were going to be doing shit like that anyway.
Right, exactly.
They had to make it scary in the ways that they could.
Yep. There was actually – and by the way, if you want to check it out, here on the Pop Feed, I did a full 6 pod blasts on the big 6 of the Universal MonsterVerse. I did Dracula, Frankenstein, the Invisible Man, the Wolfman, the Mummy, and the Creature from the Black Lagoon. So check those out, too. In fact, there was stuff edited, and I mentioned it on the blast. They edited out like screaming and you know, like when he was shoved in his casket, like really stuff that now you'd be like, what the fuck? But back then, for some reason, it broke code. Now Frankenstein, which came out later that year, of course, starring the legendary Boris Karloff. Now that really freaked the fuck out of people because he actually kills a kid in that movie. By accident, he throws the kid in the water and she drowns, but that stayed in the movie. Very strange. Frankenstein, of course, kind of stamped Universal as like your home for horror. And then, of course, The Mummy came out also with Boris Karloff, The Invisible Man, and then there were sequels up the wazoo. And that lasted through the mid-50s with The Creature from the Black Lagoon. What would you say is your favorite, like, old school monster?
I'm going to give it to Dracula on that. Pretty classic, you know.
The romanticism of it.
Yeah. And there's so much you can do with that story and that has been done with that story I don't think it gets old. I think it's timeless and classic.
Yes, I agree 100%. It is. Frankenstein had more sequels in the 25 years of Universal's run. Mm. But Dracula, again, I think the story has so many more layers than Frankenstein to a certain extent. I mean, Frankenstein was just – remember, Frankenstein is the scientist, not the monster.
Right,
a lot of people like to make that confusion, make that mistake. But
I would give Frankenstein a close second to Dracula.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. And then I think Wolfman is third. By the way, Lon Chaney, the only person ever to be Frankenstein, the Wolfman, and Dracula in Universal movies.
Nice.
Pretty impressive. God rest his soul. Now, during this time, of course, the other popular genres, war movies, of course, because we were in the throes of World War II, so there was a ton of good war movies out, and Westerns. Are you a Western fan? I don't think I've ever asked you.
I like some Westerns. I don't like them just to like them. Like, they have to be pretty good.
Oh, I agree. Sure.
You know, sure. It has to be. I'm not about, like, I don't know. I'm kind of picky with my Westerns.
Okay. That's a fair assessment. So am I.
Yeah.
And I love John Wayne. I watched a ton of John Wayne in my life. My dad loved John Wayne. Tombstone's a good movie.
Tombstone.
Unforgiven's a good movie.
For sure. Yeah.
Unforgiven's a good movie.
Mm-hmm.
I have a soft spot for Young Guns.
Yes.
Both of them.
I guess we're not very picky with our Westerns.
Well, trust me, there's a lot of garbage.
Plus,
you got your Clint Eastwoods, and then there's your spaghetti Western. I mean, we're going off the path. I'm just The horror was the big genre. Horror was the genre that took it to the next level throughout this era. And by the 50s, we saw other kind of schlocky horror movies, The Blob.
And it was it was shifting more sci-fi, really, in the 50s when you got into like aliens and robots and shit like that. So it started sort of shifting away from this classic horror.
Right. There was a an era where when you got into the like Creature from the Black Lagoon didn't really come out until the mid 50s. Mm-hmm. By then you had more kind of culty, not culty, like cult films, not culty like cult, but like not cults. That would come
not
later.
Like, not like Kelly Taylor, but like
Yes. Not like that doctor guy who kept him in. No. You know, like Plan 9 from Outer Space, like Ed Wood movies.
Yeah.
And, you know, that kind of stuff. But probably by 1956 was probably the year that things changed in horror. Number one, Bela Lugosi died in 1956. He had had a dependency problem with morphine, which, of course, was a precursor to heroin. Plus, by then, Boris Karloff decided he was done, you know, putting makeup on and that kind of stuff. So, the U.S. at that point started to kind of tail off from horror and went on to other things. You know, obviously the culture was changing and movies were becoming more gritty. We were getting more realistic movies. You know, the hippie movement came in and, mm-hmm. and we got, you know, like Easy Rider and that kind of stuff. So horror in the late 50s into the 60s kind of tailed off and the Europeans took over. Obviously, the British took over with Hammer Horror. Christopher Lee was Dracula, and those Dracula movies are excellent. I highly recommend them if you've never seen them. He did like seven of them. There were Frankensteins, and they did a ton of other horror movies. So Hammer Horror, the British film company, took over from the 60s into the early 70s. And then, of course, you had the big three of Italy, Mario Bava, Fulci, and, of course, Dario Argento, Suspiria and Inferno and all those. And you made a perfect example, Jenny, about the 1970s. I kind of made a point to mention that because I was going to kind of serpentine back to this. The 1979 Nosferatu is a perfect example of European horror. It got a little kind of avant-garde, almost artsy. Like, yeah. Horror became an art form in Europe.
Italians were, like, fucking hardcore with that.
Yeah, they you died with class.
Oh, yeah.
Even if your intestines were hanging out of you, you died with class. That's what it seemed like when you watched Suspiria or Inferno. You know, great music, great soundtracks.
Gory, too.
It was very, very fucking gory. They loved their fucking hearts and guts and fucking mm-hmm. intestines and colons and shit everywhere.
Beautiful
they loved
practical effects.
Yes, exactly. And America kind of tailed off. Now, you would have your random American horror film here and there. But for the most part, the 60s was mostly about, again, hardcore dramas. And this even goes into the early 70s, cop films. You know, America was kind of, you know, we were in Vietnam and then Watergate happened and all that stuff. So America was kind of in the dumps. So movies are very gritty. You had anti-heroes like, you know, the French Connection, The Godfather, you know, the mafia was sensationalized. You had disaster movies. Earthquake, Towering Inferno, Poseidon Adventure. So American movies kind of got away from sci-fi and imagination and went right to like kicking you in the nuts.
Right, gritty. Yeah.
You know?
Real life shit.
Real life shit. And the Europeans were the ones living on cloud nine, you know, hanging you by your fucking intestines. Then probably I would say a movie that both you and I have seen, and I just bought the Criterion edition, which is a gorgeous edition, that may have kind of at least gotten America to a certain extent back in the game was Night of the Living Dead. Mm. George Romero. Mm. Zombies. That was a new thing. Zombies. And, you know, that was a groundbreaking film because, you know, one of the leading characters was an African American. That was unprecedented at that time.
It was in black and white.
Yeah, it was in black and white. But fucking zombies, you know. Mm-hmm. We really hadn't seen anything like that since, I guess, Invasion of the Body Snatchers. Although that was an alien movie, I guess.
Yeah, it's not really much like that.
Mm.
No, because they were all very slow and shuffling zombie variety.
Easy to kill.
Yeah.
Pull their heads off. Mm-hmm. But America still was not ready for horror. Just like America was not really into sci-fi. You know, figure, again, most of the sci-fi space movies you saw in the 50s and 60s were very cheap-made, you know, fucking spaceships on strings and rubber masks and all that kind of nonsense. TV was big in sci-fi. You know, you obviously had the Twilight Zone. So sci-fi on television was no problem. It was dominating TV, but not in movies. Movies were musicals, westerns, and like counterculture, Easy Rider, dope smoking, you know, a lot of weed, a lot of sex, a lot of women with unshaved arm, you know, armpits, that kind of thing. Very down to earth.
Dirty bare feet.
Dirty bare feet, earthy, sex and mud, et cetera, et cetera. Mm-hmm. I think that's everything that was in Woodstock, in the Woodstock movie.
It was a Tarantino.
Yeah, or Tarantino.
Smorgasbord.
Exactly. And European horror also went away from the monster aspect of it, where like you had a singular villain, to demons, Satan, devils, you know, things you couldn't see, things you couldn't figure out, you know. There's a movie, I'm trying to remember the name of it. I think it's called The Killer Bed. That's fitting, huh? And it's like, I'm sure it was Italian or French or some fucking thing like that. And it was about this abandoned house where like these wayfarers would hang out in, homeless people and junkies and horny teenagers. And they'd go on this bed and the bed would eat them. It was fucked up. I'll look it up and
I've never heard of that, but yeah, I would watch that.
It's fucking crazy.
It's like these filmmakers were like, what's scarier than all of this? How about Satan?
Yeah,
all Satan. Right, let's go with that.
Demons, you know, that was the big theme of European horror, Italian, like Suspiria and Inferno, the Dario Argento movies. Mm-hmm. Mario Bava did Black, is it Black Sunday? With the witches. Witches were a big thing too. Mm-hmm. Witches and devils and like the whole monster thing, really Britain kind of cornered the market on that, again, with Hammer, with Christopher Lee as Dracula, and the British cornered the market on that. And they did a ton of Dracula, not remakes, what's the term? Adaptations. Oh, adaptations. Because at that point, Bram Stoker's book was public. In fact, both Bram Stoker's Dracula and Mary Shelley's Frankenstein, I think, were both public domain, so you could do whatever you want, as long as you didn't copy somebody else's. Like that Glenn Pierce kind of box head Frankenstein, that apparently that's copywritten. So like if you ever, like the Munsters had to pay Universal or the Boris Karloff estate money for Herman Munster to have that head. Isn't that crazy? I never knew that. I just read that the other day. When we got into the 70s though, one guy, William Friedkin, decided to make arguably the movie that put horror back on the map in America, at least got it on the map, and that's The Exorcist.
Hell yeah.
Now we're getting into our wheelhouse. Now we're getting into what America remembers about horror. Night of the Living Dead was great. George Romero was a tremendous director, but that was still not, it did well in the theaters, but it wasn't the thing that brought horror back to the forefront. The Exorcist did.
Because it was legit scary.
It was fucking, it was terrifying. And the best part about it was done by a major, was it Warner Brothers? I think it was Warner Brothers that did The Exorcist. And you had a lot of no-name actors. Really the only actor in The Exorcist that's known is Max von Sydow, who played the older priest. What was his name? I'm looking it up now. Is it Lee J? Not Lee J. Cobb. He was the cop. Father Damien. Jason Miller. But Ellen Burstyn, not known. Obviously, this was Linda Blair's first movie, so nobody knew who the hell she was.
Right.
But this movie, was it Warner Brothers? Am I right? Yes, I was right. Warner Brothers. Wow. Talk about a gut punch. And I just watched the extended cut that just came out on DVD and Blu-ray over the last several years. What were your thoughts when you first saw that movie?
I was young, yes, and my mom, it was, she would tell me stories about her being scared to death of it when she was little. Mm-hmm. And she was like, I would hide behind the couch and, you know, so she would kind of instill that fear in me too. But by the time I watched it, I'd already, you know, this is just me. So it's scary, but I'm not going to hide from it. Like, I still want to watch it. Yeah, the language, you know, young Jenny had never heard such talk before. So. Your mother sucks cocks in hell.
Yeah, your mother sucks cocks in hell.
Why? This movie is legit.
And, you know, masturbating because, with a cross. Like, yeah, what the fuck?
That shit is disturbing, right? So it sticks with you. I mean, you don't forget. I, a lot of, you know, people my age and your age, you know, much, much older than me, still
really
say that.
Much? I would have been having one much.
Still say that it's their, you know, their most scary movie, because I think that in all of horror, the things that scare me the most are the devil, the demons, and the Satan, and the all of that realm of mm-hmm. the supernatural, more than ghosts or witches or anything else. There's right. something that very visceral about possession and somebody inhabiting your body, you know, an evil entity. And like, you feel like if you watch this and if you think about it, then maybe you're inviting something in. Like, mm-hmm. is it going to get you? You know, so it's just, you go down a little bit of a slippery slope there. And I've avoided a lot of horror movies in the modern age because of that, like, sort of little, maybe not. Maybe I won't do that because I am a little bit superstitious. And, you know, like, if I don't think about it, then I won't be possessed. But if I think about it a lot, I might end up possessed. I mean, you don't know, right? It's just your level of belief, I guess, in things like that.
Yeah.
So what about you?
I first saw it, oh, God, definitely early 80s, with my brother. And it freaked me. It freaked the fuck out of me, too. No, there's no doubt about it. It was shot well. Again, great music. Music's always a key thing. I mean, any movie music's a key thing, but horror in particular, because it tells a story. And we're going to talk about in the B block a movie, a groundbreaking film you and I know very well. We did the debut episode of one of your awesome shows from this movie, mm-hmm. Where music told the tale just as much as anything else.
But then you have all these little disturbing things, too, that are not, you know, cross masturbation, but like her peeing on the carpet.
Yep.
Like, that's disturbing.
It
you
is.
Know, like, in the middle of a party, I think it was, or something.
Yeah, no,
like
it's the middle of a party.
And it's just like, so it's not inherently evil, but it's just like, okay, something is wrong with you. And I think that they don't, I think, from what I remember, it goes pretty quickly from like something's wrong with her to like get me a priest. You know, they run some tests, they have her in the hospital for a bit, but nobody knows what to do for her. Mm-hmm. And that's the other part that's not inherently evil is the helplessness of her mother. And I always felt that very strongly because what are you supposed to do? You know, right. You can't help your child, and that's terrifying in itself.
No, I agree. Oh, there's no doubt. When you're that helpless because you can't see
mm-hmm.
the villain, you
right.
know?
And she is the villain, but she's also not.
She's a vessel, you know?
Yes.
Yeah.
It's just so layered.
It is. I think that's why it made it so great. $441 million it made as of
Jesus.
This year. And it was the first horror film to be nominated for Best Picture. And it was one of 10 Oscars that it was nominated for. So it broke the glass ceiling, and the U.S. was back in the horror business. I don't want to discount some other good horror movies that were in the late 60s, like Rosemary's Baby. Mm-hmm. That's fucking creepy as fuck.
Yeah, that is creepy.
Another devil movie.
Yeah. But it builds. Like, you're just waiting to the end, right? Because, to me, that's the scariest part. They build it really well, but it's not super scary.
No, it's the shock at the end mm-hmm. that they're all fucked up. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Then 3 years later, we get another movie based on the devil, except this time it's his kids. I am talking, of course, about The Omen, which mm-hmm. is about the Antichrist and his kid, the Antichrist's kid, which is, of course, creepy in its own right. The difference there is that cast was loaded. You had Gregory Peck, one of the greatest actors ever, Lee Remick, Patrick Troughton, you sci-fi fans know as the Second Doctor. And just that again, and Richard Donner, who, of course, would go on to mm-hmm. direct Superman 2 years later.
What a twist.
I know, right? Crazy, right? Once again. Now, this time, the villain has a face. It's not unlike Regan McNeil, who was a vessel of the demon. Damien is the demon. And here you have this little kid who you think doesn't know what the fuck's going on, but he knows what the fuck's going on. I think more terrifying, what are your thoughts on this? More terrifying than an adult devil or an adult villain is a kid villain, particularly one who knows.
Yeah, because they're supposed to be innocent.
Yeah.
And they can manipulate you.
Pretty much.
Because they're a child. And grown adults are not supposed to believe that their child is the Antichrist.
I know, exactly. Meanwhile, the woman gets her fucking eyes pecked out. I think that was in the second one. Yeah, that was in the second one. Now, there were sequels to both. The second Exorcist is not very good. You and I we watched it. It's not good. And then they would do a third one, not for another till the 90s. The second Omen is not terrible. And then they would do Omen 3, The Final Conflict, in which Damien was an adult, played by Sam Neill, for those that don't know him, Jurassic Park. And that was great. That was great, by the way. So we went from monsters to devils and demons. And horror kind of got back into the consciousness of of cinema and of our entertainment viewing. Same thing with sci-fi. Sci-fi again got schlocky and goofy in the 50s and 60s, but then we had, and you, I don't know, Jenny, I want to ask you this. 2001: A Space Odyssey. Mm. You could almost call that a horror movie. I mean, it's a sci-fi movie, but you know, Hal is fucking nuts. So, I mean, it's not gory in the general sense of the word, but you could argue it's kind of a horror movie in space. But then, of course, sci-fi came back to the mainstream in 1977 with Star Wars. Mm-hmm. So, but that's another topic for more podcasts in a couple months. But by the late 70s, we had gotten out of the gritty, angry, bitter, hate everything movies and kind of got back in. Same thing with television. We had all the TV shows like All in the Family and The Jeffersons and, you know, Maude and all those sitcoms that were social commentaries on, you know, racism and all that kind of stuff. And then, but people kind of got tired of being lectured all the time. So we went back to like Disney and, you know, Little House on the Prairie and that kind of stuff. So by the late 70s, television and movies got out of like the realism game and got back into what it was meant to do, which was to entertain us and get us out of reality for a couple hours and bring us into a fantasy world.
Yes, please.
Exactly. Great A block. When we return, we're going to take a break. When we come back, we will get into the subgenre of horror that really set us off. We go from Satan and ghosts to knives and pitchforks.
And erotic cannibalism.
And ass bacon.
Yes.
Scott Criscolo, Jennifer Smith. Horror in America, part two after this.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
Place to Be Nation's JT Rosero and Chad Campbell here. We want to let you know that we have over 24 podcasts available on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and PlaceToBeNation.com. We now offer them to you on two great feeds. The Place to Be Nation Wrestling feed. We dive into topics running the gamut from today's WWE to the glory days of yesteryear and the ins and outs of the territory days. In addition to our full-length shows, we also deliver to you special pod blasts on topics old and new.
The Place to Be Nation pop feed is a veritable treasure trove of great content. Offer tremendous shows covering the land of movies, television, life, comics, and sports, brought to you by the most knowledgeable and insightful folks in the podcast world.
You can find all of these current shows, plus archives of our previous podcasts over the past 8 years, as well by subscribing to our feeds on iTunes. And while there, be sure to rate and leave feedback as well. All of these shows, plus others, available at PlaceToBeNation.com, where we cover pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, plus in-depth stretch projects and more. Be sure to support our site by using www.placetobenation.com/Amazon while doing your online shopping. And be sure to join us at our forum at Bigelow34.proboards.com for all sorts of wrestling, sports, and pop culture discussion each and every day, where you can make your voice heard. We also want to thank our friends at Boneheads Wing Bar, ProWrestlingOnly.com, and TheHistoryOfWrestling.com. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Tumblr as well. PlaceToBeNation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Welcome back, Place to Be Nation, to this special presentation, Horror in America, the Timeline. Myself, the wonderful Jennifer Smith, we are talking about horror as a genre in America, in our cinemas, our movie houses, our theaters.
Going back, I told you my name was Booty Meat. Did I not?
That's right. I forgot about that. It was your code name. God. Booty Meat, and then Tim Capel's was Ass Bacon. I know. Watch, if I say that, he'll be like, yes! Tim will love that, by the way. We're going to talk about Tim momentarily. He's a great guy. Of course, before we continue on, let us talk about this feed and the other feed here at Place to Be Nation and the other awesome feed by this fine lady over here. The Place to Be Nation pop feed has everything you want. Comics, music, movies like this one, pop culture, and all sorts of fun stuff. Great debate, year in pop. All sorts of awesome stuff. So the Place to Be Nation pop feed is your home for everything pop culture. Across the hall is the Place to Be wrestling feed, which has a ton of great programming, including my gold standard, the Place to Be podcast, Place to Be Nation's main event, a couple of exemplary shows you do, my dear. Of course, the Extreme Three-Way Dance, yourself, my PIC, Mr. Rosero, and Johnny D going through the legacy and the journey that is Extreme Championship Wrestling. Excellent listens, by the way. Excellent.
Thank you. I love that show. It's
yeah.
Old John, I'm telling
old
you.
Old John, yep.
He's a mess.
Hunter Q. Robbins. Mm-hmm. But check it out. If you could be an expert in ECW or not know a fucking thing, and you'll be entertained either way. There's an exemplary show that I am privileged to be with you on, and that is Jenny and the Gems, where you, me, Mr. Matt Souza, and Mr. Drew Wardlaw dig deep into WWE Network's bag of goodies for something that no one's ever seen and talk about it. Those are always fun.
Yeah, it seems like every week something comes up like, that needs to be a Jenny in the Gyms. Like,
I know.
We have a backlog, okay?
Yeah, it's crazy. It's fucking crazy. And most of the stuff's WCW, which is pretty damn awesome.
Yes,
it is. Yes, and the last one we did was Boogie Jam 84, which was awesome because it's Boogie Jam. We have a lot of WCW in the hopper, so I'm looking forward to when we dive into that. So check that out as well in the wrestling feed. All sorts of other great wrestling shows as well. Put in your ballot for the greatest WWE TV match of all time. That ends on New Year's Eve. Jenny loves lists.
Totally do.
Yeah. and talking WCW, how could I forget? Speaking of Tim Capel, duh. You, Tim, Greg Phillips, you guys doing an exemplary show highlighting a legendary wrestler in WCW lore.
Mm-hmm.
you're going to probably say, you're probably going to think that Ric Flair was my favorite episode, but believe it or not, my favorite episode is still the Steiner Brothers, because I hated the Steiner Brothers until I listened to that podcast.
You hated the Steiner Brothers.
I really did. I was not a Steiner Brothers fan. Not at all. But no more, thanks to you guys.
What happened in the episode that changed?
I don't know. I don't know. Well, you guys picked good matches, and I watched them, and I'm like, you know what? These guys are like the Road Warriors without face paint. Like, they beat the shit out of you. They're stiff. They pummel jobbers. I'm like, it's the Road Warriors without face makeup, and the Road Warriors are my favorite tag team of all time. So I'm like, wow, they were right. You did Amazing. Some good ones. Rick Rude, Dustin yes. Rhodes, Love the Natural, yeah. mm-hmm. Dusty. So talking WCW, exemplary show on the Place to Be wrestling feed. And you fired up your own awesome podcast feed, The Jenny Position. Tell us about it.
I did. I was kind of crowding the pop feed with all of my shows, and I still have more ideas for things that I wanted to do. So I kind of ventured out on my own, but mm-hmm. still, you know, with lots of support from you guys, which I appreciate. So Geek and Sassy, Freak Out Drive-In, Talk and Pop are all on the Jenny Position. And so you can find it on Podbean, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Play, Stitcher. So, just subscribe to that and you'll get, some good content, hopefully. By now you should be able to hear probably one of my most favorite things I've ever made before. One of my episodes called Telling Stories, and it's like a storytelling podcast, which I did all the reading for and all the produced myself, and it was really, really fun. And I really enjoy that genre of podcast. So it's really just a hodgepodge of all different sort of things that I want to try out. It's episodic in a way, but also you never know which version you're going to get. So I like that about it. And mm-hmm. I have ideas for more stuff. So you can find it on our Facebook page, Jenny mm-hmm. Position, and on Twitter at mm-hmm. Jenny Position.
It's awesome. And the telling stories is fantastic.
Thank you.
It's I was enthralled and sucked in when I listened. So please do. If you have not yet, it's Halloween. Do it.
Do it.
It's perfect for a night like tonight or a day like today or tonight. Listen to it in the dark. Listen to it with a candle. It's pretty cool. I cannot stress that enough. So there's a lot of fucking talent here. So take advantage of it. It's here for you. Place B Nation Pop Feed, Place B Nation Wrestling Feed, and the Jenny Position. Endless talent all the time. Do the booty meat.
Do the booty meat.
Do the booty meat. Huh. If we could do a live watch for that. That's a pod blast.
I'm seriously considering an in-depth breakdown, like try to find the creators of the show.
Yeah, we have to.
Because
it was Athens, Georgia.
That would make it. Yeah. I know, but I need to know. I want to talk to the actors. I want to talk to the people who put this.
What did somebody say? One of our chat friends. What did they say? What she looked like? Who was it singing?
Amy Schumer.
Amy Schumer. We got to get Tim. Tim's got to watch it. Tim's got to watch it.
Yes. Oh, for sure.
I definitely want to hear Tim's reaction. Anyway, all these great podcast feeds you can find where Jenny said you could find them, and they're unlimited and free. And enjoy. When you go to placebination.com, by the way, click on the Amazon link. And when you go on Amazon, nothing, you pay for nothing extra. Buy what you're buying. We just get a little bit on the website. Andy Atherton's broke. He's living in his car. That's why he does all these podcasts. He thinks he could sell them. Andy's got great podcasts. Great Debate.
He does.
Great Debate, Year in Pop, or as this one calls it, the Old Cast. How many muches did you really have to give me in the last segment? Really?
Too much.
Good tag team. What else does he do? Jesus Christ. Looking forward, looking back. Yeah, looking forward. What else does he do? He's got a bunch of things swirling in his head. Anyway, placebination.com, your home for everything pop culture. And again, check out the awesome podcast feeds as well. All right. So where we left off in the timeline was the late 70s. Demons and Satan and witches were the big genre. Really the only like creepy villain killer movie probably in the last 10 years to that point was probably Black Christmas, which came out in the early 70s. There was the creepy guy living in the or hiding in the room upstairs, Olivia Hussey, who was Juliet, Romeo and Juliet. They did a remake of that sometime in the last 10 years, I guess. But other than that, we didn't really have like
What year was Texas Chainsaw Massacre?
Oh, Texas Chainsaw came out in that's a great idea. Texas Chainsaw 74.
I was thinking it was earlier mid.
Let me see. Texas Chainsaw. You know, I'm glad you brought that up because
it was pretty huge too.
Yeah. Again, also kind of a creepy cheap made by, you know, Vortex production company. It came out October of 74, and Leatherface, yes, clearly one of the creepiest, and that is fucking bloody disgusting. I mean, for fuck's sakes, they put a fucking hook in the chick's ass.
Yes.
I mean, it's fucked up. By the way, John Larroquette, this is a great trivia question. John Larroquette, you know, the actor, he was on Night Court and he was in Stripes. Mm-hmm. He's the narrator of the movie.
Oh.
He did not get paid in money. You know what he got paid in?
Hot dogs.
Weed.
Nice.
Yep. Yes, he did.
That's worth it. That's
yeah. Exactly.
How much does it say? How much?
I know. Oh no, it doesn't say how much. I wonder
how much like you get.
I know. Really? Wow, Toby Hooper. Where did you?
I would work for weed.
Is that you on the side of the road?
Yes. Yes, we'll work
Booty
for meat. Weed.
We'll work for weed. But anyway, yeah.
Take Texas... cash money for booty meat, okay?
Yeah. Texas Chainsaw Massacre, definitely. But that was like over the top crazy. Mm-hmm. And then it was a one shot. Like the sequel didn't come out till the mid to late 80s. Mm-hmm. But the movie that really turned the corner for horror came out in October of 1978. John Carpenter, who did Assault on Precinct 13. Along with Compass International and Trankus, more low-budget independent film, did a movie about an escaped mental patient who went off to kill the babysitter. That movie was Halloween. And if you go to the Place Be Nation pop feed, you will see the inaugural episode of this fine lady's Freak Out Drive-In, where you and I did the inaugural Halloween.
We did. We live watched it and we found a fuck pumpkin.
Fuck pumpkin. God, the things you and I have come up with in the time that we've watched Amazing Horror. That might be an autobiography. From fuck pumpkins to ass bacon.
Nobody would read that except for blowjob baby face.
Blowjob baby face. And Tim. But yeah, Halloween. Low budget, the only kind of like The Exorcist. The only actor in The Exorcist was Max von Sydow. The only actor anybody knew in Halloween was Donald Pleasance. Mm-hmm. Jamie Lee Curtis, nobody knew who the hell she was. You know, they knew her parents. Her mother was Janet Leigh, Scream Queen. Oh, Psycho. Now, Alfred Hitchcock, quickly, let me backtrack a second. We talk about Alfred Hitchcock. He's not really horror. They were thrillers.
Yeah.
Those weren't horror movies. Even The Birds, as creepy as that is with the eye pecking and everything. Alfred Hitchcock's movies were not horror. They were thrillers. Let's clarify that. Even Psycho was borderline between thriller and horror. But all of his other great movies, Rear Window, Vertigo, North by North, those are all thrillers. Rope. Once again, an independent company did a horror movie about an escaped mental patient killing the babysitters. And it took off. Took off. Made a ton of money as an independent film. What made the movie great? There's minimal blood.
Mm-hmm.
I think the only blood you see is on the – and I think we mentioned this when we did the show.
In the car?
Yeah, when what's her name? When Annie gets killed, I think mm-hmm. there's some on her throat. And then when they show the auto mechanic guy dead in the mm-hmm. weeds, mm-hmm. I think they show him blood. Other than that, no blood at all. And John Carpenter says in the extras of the Blu-ray, before he did the music, he showed it to people at, I think it was 20th Century Fox, and they said, this isn't scary. Well, he didn't put the music in yet. And that was also what we were saying earlier about music making, setting the scene. And it was all about camera angles and dialogue and shadows and you know, not necessarily jump scares, but it opened up a new subgenre of horror, the slasher film, a knife.
And the vulnerable girl, the heroine mm-hmm. in the end, you know,
right.
Fighting off the bad guy, maintaining her virginity, number one, and mm-hmm. and then fighting off the bad guy.
Yeah. John Carpenter made a funny comment, too. It's funny you bring that up because – and we'll talk about this in the next few minutes when we get into the way slasher movies were throughout the 80s. Whores get killed. Mm-hmm. Pretty much.
Whores gonna die.
Sluts die, virgins live.
Yep.
And asshole guys die, too. Not True. Just ladies. Asshole guys die too. And occasionally the nice guys die too. If you watch further of other
well, court. Most of the guys die.
True. Usually in spectacular fashion. What was it about Halloween for you that made it different than horror movies before it? Why is it considered so special?
A relatable main character. Just an everyday kind of girl, mm-hmm. you know, it's realistic and supernatural at the same time. So like an escaped mental patient, that's a thing that could happen to you. Mm-hmm. You know, being a home invasion that could happen to you.
Right.
So it's very relatable fear. And then the thing about that movie is that they do such a good job in building your dread, like mm-hmm. she can tell things are off. Mm-hmm. It's like she has some sense about it mm-hmm. and everybody else seems pretty, you know, ambivalent to it, mm-hmm. but she's tuned in to this something, this wrongness.
Right.
And then the simplicity of Michael Myers, he doesn't talk. He doesn't have any other plans than to just murder you. I mean, it's like, it's not complicated.
Right.
It's just simple.
Yep. And he would become the first of what I originally was going to call this podcast, the Holy Trinity of Slasher. But I wanted to kind of expand the scope of the topic to horror in general. But we were going to originally do just these three guys, but mm-hmm. but I wanted to get into more stuff. But then 2 years later, a guy by the name of Sean Cunningham, who lived in Connecticut, by the way, worked with Paramount to do his inaugural horror film about a deformed boy who drowns in a lake while counselors are throwing it in each other in a cabin and they end up getting killed and et cetera, et cetera. I am talking, of course, about Friday the 13th. There was no shortage of blood in that one.
Oh, no.
there was no hiding nothing from Kevin Bacon getting the arrow in his throat.
Yes.
Kevin Bacon, by the way. Very young Kevin Bacon.
Yeah.
I remember seeing that years later. And I was like, what the fuck is this? Like, this is completely different than Halloween in that aspect. It was in your face. Again, great music, great camera, a lot of darkness. That's always the big thing about horror movies. Everything's in the dark. Mm-hmm. 90% of deaths are at night, obviously, because the shadows is where the killers go to hide. What were your thoughts when you saw the first Friday?
So Jason is my favorite of the slashers, and this is one, like this and the sequels, is one that we would put on at the lake house. At my family had a lake house, so it was kind of in the woods. And oh, yeah, so
head up.
So we had them on like VHS and would put them on at the lake, and it was just, you know, add to the whole like feeling of it. And my cousins would tease me and try to scare me and put on the mask and make the noise,
yep.
You know? Yep. And, so it, a lot of my love of Jason is tied up in the memories of that too, you know, just tangentially related to that. But, again, it's simple. Like, even though it's supernatural, the way that he keeps coming back from the dead, he's not talking to you. He's not telling you why he's going to kill you. He's just going to kill you.
Yep. You're in the way.
It doesn't matter. Like, yep. And again, the whole morality thing kind of comes in there too, because if you're the camp counselors in there screwing on one of the bunk beds, you're probably going to die.
Yep.
But if you remain, no. Yes. But if you remain pure, you might survive.
Yep. Might. Another lesser known horror franchise that started around this time was in 1979, and that was Phantasm, which is the Don Coscarelli franchise about the skinny man, Angus Scrimm, and the ball with the the blade sticking out of it. Yeah, that's alien horror, because they're aliens actually. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And I just I watched the first Phantasm some time ago. I have all five on in a set, and they got progressively really cheesy.
Bonkers,
at the end,
but
yeah, they got a little kind of a fucking off the rails. In fact, the sequel didn't come out for another 9 years after that. So, then 4 years later, in 1984, a very well known horror producer, a guy by the name of Wes Craven, who did Last House on the Left and a couple of other legendary horror films, decided to start. He starts a franchise based on an article he wrote about a guy who died in his sleep because of his dreams.
Mm.
And imagine a killer that's not really a person. It's almost like a ghost, but not really. I am, of course, talking about the third and final of the Trinity, A Nightmare on Elm Street. I've always considered the Nightmare franchise the most cerebral.
I was 100% about to say that, because yeah. Freddy talks to you. He mm-hmm. tells you what's up. He fucks with you. Yes. He wants to toy with you. He wants to just scare the fuck out of you just as many times as he can. It just toys with you. So a lot of that, even though it is gory, especially with the, you know, knives on the hands and blah, 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 whatever, he's taunting you the whole mm-hmm. time, you know, yeah. And it will make you go crazy, right?
Right. Absolutely. Because
people don't believe you. Shit keeps happening to you. You can't go to sleep. So you're already suffering because you're scared to sleep. So
right.
That Nightmare on Elm Street is pretty layered, but it there's some comedy in there, and it's not, I mean, it still does the like heroine trope, like mm-hmm. the lone standing woman at the end, but
yep.
It was always, like you said, a little bit more cerebral. I had another point. Oh, the actor, Robert Englund?
Yes.
So he makes that role.
Oh, absolutely. He's obviously the one killer that talks of the
yes.
three.
Yes.
And he's the one whose face you technically see,
mm-hmm.
even though it's burned. Obviously, Jason has the hockey mask and Michael has the Shatner mask. And that went off like crazy. And, you know, 1984 was a big year for movies in many ways, from, you know, The Breakfast Club and all those great movies. And of course, a year later with Back to the Future and sci-fi and that kind of stuff. The mid-80s was a golden age of all kinds of films. All three of them, all three franchises have their positives. All three franchises have their negatives. Halloween is my favorite, and Michael Myers is my favorite, probably because the story always intrigued me more than anything else. And because they were always the underdog, because they never got hooked on to a major movie company. Well, I guess Freddy, to a certain extent, did. New Line Cinema was kind of a low – they were like in, you know, second rate for the first few Nightmares. Then they started to make money. But Paramount has always been behind Friday the 13th, so they always had a budget. They had to have a budget for all that fucking gore and blood and guts. That stuff's not free. Halloween, for the most part, they were always under Compass International and Trankus and the indie houses until I think Dimension Films did the sixth one in 1995. So I always had a soft spot for Halloween because I always felt it was the underdog of the three because they never got the budget and everything that the others did. But now we're into the golden age of cinema. Just like I think music's best decade was the 80s, I think horror's best decade was the 80s. Not only did you have the big three, Hellraiser came out, Pinhead. He was another one that was witty when he didn't mean to be. And then, of course, you had all the copycats. You had plenty of slashers like, you know, Happy Birthday to Me and April Fool's Day. Like every holiday had a fucking slasher in it. Prom Night. We can't forget Stephen King, Carrie, Cujo, Salem's Lot, which was actually a TV movie, but still very scary.
You know what I love? Sleepaway Camp.
Oh my God. Sleepaway Camp is arguably, now if you're a horror fan, if you're a moderate horror fan, you'll have no idea probably what the fuck we're talking about. But if you're a diehard like the two of us, you know what Sleepaway Camp is. The ending of Sleepaway Camp is arguably the most fucked up, terrifying ending to a horror movie I've ever seen in my life.
I mean, short of booty meat, yeah.
Yeah, short of booty meat. And Terrifier. We can't forget Art. We'll get
but
to
But yeah, that movie is... I know they made sequels, but like that first one is... one of a kind, like
In essence, it's typical kind of, for those that may not know, we'll give you a little bit of a teaser. It's typical like Friday the 13th fair. Kids are at a camp and counselors are mysteriously dying, and
this one strange little girl is the main character.
She's sympathetic because she's gone through a shitty life.
Yeah,
but I don't want to ruin the end.
Yeah, really you can't. No, you
I know.
Can't.
Fuck. All right, we can't. You
have to watch it.
You have to watch it. Don't worry about the second, because you'll see that there's three of them. Skip the second and third. The second and third are fucking terrible. But the ending of the first Sleepaway Camp is arguably the most fucked up, scariest ending to a horror movie of all time. Both visually and audibly.
Yeah.
You know what I mean.
Audibly.
Audibly. Believe me. I think that freaks me out more than the visual. But anyway, you have to see it. So the 80s had a ton of crazy, scary shit. I'm just scratching the surface, but tons of great horror movies in the 80s. And then I think it's 1988. Let me make sure. I want to confirm that. I don't want to be wrong. I believe in 1990, we had the return of the Exorcist franchise with Exorcist 3, which was okay. So in 1988, we had another – this is probably a second-level horror franchise. I wouldn't put it on the level of Friday, Nightmare, or Halloween. But this one was also somewhat demonic because it's the spirit of a serial killer in a doll.
Yeah.
And, of course, we are talking about – Chucky himself, Child's Play. Now that's, of course, the Charles Lee Ray, and his. By the way, Brad Dourif is awesome, and his spirit, because he's a spooky voodoo follower or whatever, mm-hmm. puts his spirit in a Chucky doll. And then we have a ton of partially awesome, partially ridiculous sequels. And then they just rebooted it earlier this year or late last year.
I actually just rewatched that this weekend.
The first one?
Yeah, the first one.
Oh, and so good.
It really is. Like, yeah. The way that they made Chucky move was
yep.
pretty amazing for the 80s as far as effects go.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it was so creepy to see this little doll walking around.
Right.
And he had those little quick movements,
mm-hmm.
Like scuttling. Oh my
yep.
God.
Yep.
Even that's just, and then, you know, they have such trouble killing him. And
yep.
That movie just holds up. It's just really great.
I like this first two. Mm-hmm. The first two are really good. All the ones after that, you know, when he gets the girlfriend and Jennifer
yeah.
Tilly and
yeah.
then it falls off the rails a little bit. But then I think it came back. I think it was Chucky.
Mm-hmm.
The one that came out like in the late 90s, early 2000s, I guess. Let me, Curse of Chucky. Is that the one I'm thinking of?
Might be.
Or is it Curse of Chucky?
I think there's.
Yeah. The girl in the wheelchair. Yeah.
Yeah.
Curse of Chucky. And then Cult of Chucky is actually really fucked up. But then they had the goofy ones in the middle. Anyway, the 80s were just the golden age for me of horror. We had all sorts of crazy shit. Movies in the 80s in general were good. It went into the early 90s. All three franchises had their negatives, too.
How dare you?
I know, but we have to be objective. The Halloween had story issues, and of course they had fiscal issues. The story changed twice. John Carpenter would dip his toe in, dip his toe out, dip his toe in. There's technically three timelines of Halloween, which is fucked up. You could watch 1 through 6. You could watch 1, 2, then skip ahead to H2O and Halloween Resurrection. Or you could watch 1 and then the one that came out last year. And then the Rob Zombie ones, which nobody counts. Friday the 13th never really had problems. To Friday the 13th's credit, they stopped taking themselves seriously. Like, for me,
right.
you could watch the first four and you're good. Like, if you don't watch another one after the final chapter, you're good. 5 through 8 are comedically good.
Mm.
But by then, they weren't taking themselves seriously anyway.
Right.
So if they weren't going to, you didn't either, but you enjoyed it anyway. And they still made money. The falls up to 7. Jason Takes Manhattan did not do well. It's one thing to be successful creatively. It's one thing to suck creatively, but be successful financially. It's another thing to suck in both.
Right.
And by the time it got to Jason Takes Manhattan, nobody was going anymore. Plus, you know, horror franchises do have a shelf life. And I think by 1989, people were kind of cooked on that. Do you agree with that? That you know, the casual horror fan could probably watch up to final chapter and be good, or like, would you have been fine if they stopped there, or did they have a need to continue?
There's always a need for Jason movies.
That's true.
I mean, it's really hard for me to be objective about that. And it's not that I particularly love the movie, you know, 5 through 8 or whatever, but it's just the idea of it.
Sure. I don't disagree with that. Sure.
And I'm the kind of person who likes the comedy of it as well. So
I agree. Yeah. Sure.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, sure. Nobody needs those movies, but like, they're great. Like
they are great. No, they're great. You're right.
I mean, even though they're some of them are not great, they're still great. Like, just for me. Like, nostalgia is a lot of this, too. So,
yes. No, I agree.
I admit I am biased. So,
no, you have every right to be. I mean, I have them all. I mean, we watch them all. There's no doubt about it. And again, they were making money. So, as long as they were making money, they could have been creative garbage. But if they were fun garbage to watch, then so be it. The deaths were getting better and better.
Yes.
You went from simple harpoons in the eye to the chick getting killed in the fucking sleeping bag. So you know, great, great ways to die. But now, Nightmare, here's where Nightmare, in my opinion, suffered more than the other two did. Friday the 13th and Halloween could spend more money on other things because they didn't have to pay one guy to be the bad guy.
Yeah.
There were like fucking four fucking Jasons till Kane Hodder. And there was I don't know how many fucking Michaels there were, like seven. There's only one Robert Englund.
Mm-hmm.
And the problem there was you had to pay him. Because if anybody else tried to be him, fuck that shit.
No. Mm-mm. It only works with him.
It only works with him. The problem, this is my opinion, and I'm curious if you agree, because I know you've seen them all. Nightmare on Elm Street was always a very cerebral, as we said, story. The problem was because A, you had to pay a lot for him, and B, you obviously had to pay for the effects, because that shit's not cheap. You had to scale back on other stuff. Now, you could skimp on actors in horror movies because most of them die within 45 minutes anyway. Mm-hmm. So you don't really need to, you know, you don't need fucking Laurence Olivier to be in a fucking horror movie. You just get a bunch of people, you know, the guys had to be good looking. The chicks have to have, you know, decent sized tits and look pretty. And then they end up dying in 45 minutes. The problem with the Nightmare on Elm Street series is there was a lot of acting in that because the story was so deep. But the problem was they couldn't afford good actors.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I've gotten in debates with other people about this. Like I just watched it the other night. The third one, Dream Warriors, with mm-hmm. a then unknown Kristen, Patricia Arquette, who she played Kristen. That was her name in the movie. That movie's fantastic. Dream Warriors is a great movie. But then the next two movies, The Dream Master and The Dream Child, delved into Freddy's backstory, but the actors were so bad. So bad. And unlike Halloween and Friday the 13th, where you don't have to give a fuck how they deliver their lines because they're going to get killed in half an hour anyway. The actress who played Alice was lasting for two films, and she had to do a ton of acting because she was like the linchpin of the story now, and the acting was just not good.
Mm-hmm.
And unfortunately, Nightmare suffered because of it. My opinion. What do you think about that?
Yeah, if you're going to have like you said, the whole backstory of Freddy and all this, then it goes deeper than just some guy slashing you in the woods. There's more to that story. So you do need a higher caliber actress. And it's funny because Jamie Lee Curtis sitting over there, a really good actress.
Mm-hmm.
And wonder what it'd be like if she had been in a Freddy movie as opposed to Halloween.
Well, that would have been huge.
Yeah, like
huge.
Interesting, but yeah, I would agree with that. In the later movies, the more campy it gets, it doesn't matter, you know. But when they're trying to still be sort of kind of legit, then yeah, it does suffer from lack of good acting.
Mm-hmm.
But that, Robert Englund does make up for quite a bit of that.
No, he does. He does. And a lot of people, of course. Now, I can't blame him because a lot of people say, well, too many people liked Freddy because he was funny.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody loved Jason. Everybody loved Michael Myers. And everybody loved him. That's why they are who they are.
Mm-hmm.
By the 90s, those franchises tailed off. I mean, in 1991, you had Freddy's Dead, The Final Nightmare. And then 3 years later, you had Wes Craven's New Nightmare, which, by the way, is a great movie.
I love that movie.
It's a tremendous movie. So Freddy ended. After Jason Takes Manhattan, 4 years later in 1993, we had Freddy, Jason Goes to Hell. That movie is fucking terrible.
Yeah, it's really bad.
Terrible. Jason's Essence. That was fucking stupid. Halloween, then, after 6 years was Halloween 6, The Curse of Michael Myers, which had like a director's cut and a theatrical cut, and it was a whole big confusing mess. Then 2 years later, they retconned it, And then, as I mentioned, we mentioned this movie earlier, Jamie came back for Halloween H2O. The movie was fucking great. Then 4 years later, they come back with a Halloween Resurrection with Busta Rhymes. You could roll your eyes at that one. And then, of course, Rob Zombie did his versions. And then now, of course, Carpenter came back and et cetera. So by the 90s, probably the early to mid 90s, horror, once again, like the 60s, kind of tailed off. We had more. Same thing with James Bond. James Bond tailed off, too, for those 6 years. So two popular, you know, horror genres or movie genres kind of tailed off. We had a lot of action movies in the 90s. We had some great dramas, Forrest Gump and Philadelphia and that kind of stuff. We went back to kind of some realistic movies.
Mm-hmm.
Then in 1996, two movies came out that changed the face of horror again and brought it back to the forefront. One of them was a mockumentary almost about horror movies.
Yes.
That movie, of course, is Scream, directed by Wes Craven.
Mm-hmm.
The other movie, which I think almost is just as important, I believe that came out in 96. Oh, no, that came out 3 years later. Okay.
Yeah, I was thinking it was later.
Yeah, it was later. This movie came out in 1999, mm-hmm. and this opened up a new genre. A new subgenre, I should say, of horror. The movie I'm talking about is The Blair Witch Project. And suddenly we had a new subgenre of horror, found footage. There was some found footage in the 70s, a couple of haunted house movies, but nothing like Blair Witch.
What did you think of Blair Witch?
It scared the shit out of me.
Yeah. Did you see, like, I remember, because I was still in high school, and the internet was still pretty, you know, basic.
Mm-hmm.
But I remember believing that the story was real. So, mm-hmm. like, because they had it set up like a website.
Yep,
and I would go on the website and read all this crap. And there was a lot of buzz about it. And I fully bit on all of that. Like, I was convinced that all this was real. And so that was a very unique movie-going experience because I went opening weekend and the theater was fucking packed and mm-hmm. wild. Like, I've never seen people behave this way in a movie theater.
Yep.
I will never forget it. It was so fucking scary and everybody was scared.
Mm-hmm. I agree. I saw it in the theater as well, and I was freaked out too. Now, again, found footage was not an uncommon thing in the 70s, a couple of horror haunted house ones, but another independent film, by the way, Artisan Entertainment was technically an independent company. And so was Haxan Films.
Mm-hmm.
So just like Halloween, this was made with a budget of like 10 bucks and a bag of weed. So
yeah, pretty much.
Pretty much. So.
And it made how much?
It made $250 million fucking
dollars. That is insane.
The budget, I'm not fucking with you. The budget was $60,000.
Wow.
That is fucked up. And it's, you know how long it is? 81
it's super
minutes.
Super short, yeah.
Yeah, which is the length. And I laugh, I goof with you when I tell you when I'm putting on my Universal Monsters. They're all, like, stupid short. I think maybe one I've watched so far is over 90 minutes. So they packed a lot into a very small.
Mm-hmm. You know, I haven't seen it in years. I need to rewatch it.
Yeah, that might be a pretty good FODI.
Mm,
somebody has the balls to watch it with you. Because it freaks the fuck out of you. Scream was different. Mm-hmm. Wes Craven was almost making fun of himself.
Yes.
And they goofed with the tropes, even though it ended up being like a pretty good horror franchise.
I still love that movie.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. But it woke up once again, just like The Exorcist did in 1973. In my opinion, Scream and then 3 years later, The Blair Witch Project woke up the horror genre again in America after it kind of dipped out in the early mid 90s.
Well, you had the whole like teen like resurgence.
Correct.
You know, I Know What You Did Last Summer and
yes,
Final Destination, yeah. All that jazz. Yeah.
And then you move ahead to Paranormal Activity and
that movie is scary as fuck.
Yes, Paranormal Activity. Oh, you know what? I want to backtrack quickly because there's speaking of, and this is sort of a found footage movie, but it was shot like a regular movie. I don't want to discount, and I don't want to discount our good friend who we both do shows with, Mr. J. Arsenio D'Amato, because he grew up and lived near this place. I don't want to discount in terms of a legitimately scary movie, the original Amityville Horror.
Yeah,
that movie's fucking great. The remake with Ryan Reynolds.
I liked it too.
Yeah, it wasn't bad.
There's a lot of shirtless Ryan Reynolds in that movie, though, so that might have been why I liked it. He was swole for that movie.
Yes, he was swole. James Brolin was not shirtless a lot in 1970.
No, he was not.
Nobody wanted to see Margot Kidder naked. she's fine as Lois Lane in the fucking aluminum foil. Sorry, tin foil sheets in the.
Thank you.
In the. Fortress of Solitude. Anyway, I digress. I just don't want to discount the Amityville Horror because that's a great horror movie, both the original and the remake. The remake is actually pretty good. I have to give Ryan Reynolds. I don't, you know, obviously he's a man. I could care about less about his swoleness, but he was good in it. I have to give him credit.
He said, as a wrestling fan,
I know. Yeah, the swole Steiner brothers.
Yeah, I don't give a shit.
The swole Steiner brothers. So. Now, as we talk about today, modern day, in the last 20 years, found footage has become a big thing. Demons have come back again.
Yep.
And haunted houses have come back now.
Yep.
Because we don't want to forget about the current. Right now, really, next to Marvel and DC, actually, this franchise is probably more successful than DC, depending on your point of view. The Conjuring franchise.
Yep.
Now, I met Ed and Lorraine Warren. They actually came to my college. Nice people. They lived in Connecticut. Nice people. A little weird. No surprise there. But nice people. In fact, Ed passed away in the late – right around the time that Scream came out, late 90s. And Lorraine just died earlier this year, late last year. I think she lived into her 90s.
You think they came back as ghosts?
They better have. Why wouldn't they have? They should have. They should be going after the other ghosts. That'd be great. Let me ask you something while we were talking about the Conjuring franchise. Do dolls freak you out? Not like Chucky. That doesn't count. I'm talking about Annabelle.
It's not my most favorite thing, but it's not the worst. It's pretty creepy.
Okay.
I just watched this movie on Shudder that had a doll theme too, and that was pretty rough because the killers were like dressing up the girls as dolls.
Oh, that's fucked up shit.
Yeah, it was fucked up.
Anyway, the Conjuring franchise, which now is like five deep. You have what, two Conjurings, three Annabelles now, The Nun, which is a true story, and The Curse of La Llorona, which is actually a true story about, it's a Mexican folktale, or I guess Mexican folk story. Now, you can do anything and make it a horror movie. Anything. You know? We saw a movie, you and I watched a movie once about, what was it, the fucking flesh-eating bacteria that fucking ate the people in the cabin or whatever the fuck that shit was. That was crazy. You know.
You know what else is a pretty big subgenre of horror would be like a animal-based thing like...
Oh,
like Jaws, yep. Like Lake Placid,
crocodile,
the boar,
boar.
I have a soft spot for those type of movies too, and also movies like Slither, which I just watched, it's in that really weird, it has really bad CGI, but really good practical effects, too.
Mm-hmm.
And it's Alien invasion, pretty much.
Right.
But that's a great movie, too. And also a little bit of comedy in there, too. I like a horror comedy.
Yes. No, I agree. And I feel like in the last 20 years of horror, again, you could really go anywhere. Speaking of, let me ask you about Jaws. Is Jaws a horror movie?
I never really saw it as a horror movie. I don't know why. I guess because it's just an animal, right? Like, it's not hunting you for anything other than food. You know what right. I mean? I don't know.
Yep.
I'm
just curious.
It's mindless, right?
Yeah, that's true. Yep. Although by Jaws the Revenge, it chased her to the Bahamas.
Yeah, that's true.
You're makes right. no fucking sense considering yeah. that sharks can't swim in warm water, but whatever. So let me ask you this as we reach the end of the line here.
Mm-hmm.
What is your favorite? Well, other than, of course, erotic cannibalism, because that's everybody's number one now. What is your favorite subgenre of horror? Do you like ghosts? Do you like haunted houses? Do you like? I mean, we all like gore. Gore doesn't count because gore is an aspect of horror, not really a theme.
That's really hard because I do really like a lot of horror.
Me too. I think we all do.
I might have to go with the slasher.
Okay. I've always been a soft spot for haunted houses.
I do love haunted houses too.
Yeah. Ghosts are cool. I think because ghosts are challenging.
Like a poltergeist type thing?
Oh, poltergeist is fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's hard. I think it's hard to do a good horror movie when you can't see the villain. You know?
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, I mean, I, again, when it comes to horror, I could watch anything. And thank God for Shudder. Thank God for Shudder.
Yes.
What an outlet, you know? What an outlet. Is Creepshow a horror movie? Of course, they did a remake, and they're doing a remake series on Shudder. That's why this just came into my mind, because you and I have talked about both. Creep shows in the past.
Yeah, I'm really enjoying the.
Me too. Check it out.
The latest episode had some pretty good little, because they do like two stories per episode.
Yes. Yep.
And yeah, I would call it horror. Mm-hmm. I think it is horror. It's, you know, okay. Romero and wasn't he involved in that? No.
Yep. Romero and
Romero.
Your boy Stephen King.
Stephen King.
You know. By the way, Greg Nicotero does it now.
Yes.
He's a big, he was a Stan Winston alum and a John Carl Buechler, God rest his soul, alum of great effects and gross and, you know, crazy.
Yeah.
Stuff.
Yeah. He knows what he's doing.
He knows his stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Where do you see horror going?
Hmm.
Do you think we'll get a dip again?
I hope not. I know that there's been a couple of attempts at like a technology-based sort of horror. Techno-horror. I don't mm-hmm. know. Whatever you want to call it. That's interesting.
Mm. I hope not either. I think it's here to stay because it's I don't say it's easy, but when you think of independent films, I feel like sci-fi and horror seem to be the genres that independent filmmakers go after. Probably because it's the most exciting. You don't do low budget comedy. I guess you could do low budget comedy. All right. Minus the big three. If you had to pick three horror movies that you could literally watch anytime, any place, anywhere, what would they be? Minus Halloween, minus Freddy, minus Jason. Take those out because those we can all watch whenever. But if you had like three horror movies, what are your like go-tos other than those? Like if you were recommending to somebody who never watched a horror movie before, other than Freddy, Jason, or Michael, what would you recommend?
Why do you gotta take them away?
Because they're easy.
Scream.
Mm-hmm.
Shit. This is hard. Exorcist.
Yep. That's one of my three.
Need something. Sleepaway Camp.
Yeah, I agree. Oh, you know what franchise we didn't mention? Saw.
Yeah. That's a fucked up genre.
It is a fucked up genre. Now, a lot of people think that franchise is... I've had discussions with horror fans who think it's mildly overrated. I think maybe they did maybe four movies too many.
Probably,
but,
yes.
But the first one is fucking amazing.
It's good, yeah.
Second one's pretty good. And then after that, it probably falls off the wagon.
Mm-hmm.
I would have people, I would pick The Exorcist, The Amityville Horror, and then for shits and giggles, for just pure gore, Hostel.
Mm.
Not because of the plot, but because it's just fucking sick.
It is fucking sick. I kind of want to throw in a Stephen King in there.
I know. I think the one that I would probably pick... What's the freakiest? Well, you know, one of my favorites, Pet Sematary, the original. I love Cujo. Cujo's really good. Anyway, the horror genre, you could just go off the rails. The Grudge. I used to freak out. There was a girl that we used to work with, Rotella, and I used to just freak her out because he would bring up the YouTube clip and just go, and she'd freak the fuck out every time.
Yeah, a lot of those, yeah, The Ring, a lot of those Japanese or
yes.
Korean horror films are really fucked up.
Yes, Audition, oh my God, that's fucking crazy. So the moral of the story here is, horror is a great genre, always will be, and it'll always be here. War movies have kind of gone in and out, a lot of other genres have gone in and out, but... horror will always be here. It may change in tone, change in theme, but you'll always find it somewhere. And again, you can thank Shudder for that. And you can always go back to Michael and Jason and Freddy. But don't forget the classics like The Exorcist or Dracula, for that matter.
Right.
Hey, it's been a pleasure. This was awesome.
Thank you so much. I love talking about this stuff.
I love talking about horror. The Jenny Position. Check the feed out. It's fucking great. And I highly recommend those stories. Those were awesome.
Thank you.
I want to highlight that now because it is Halloween and it kicked ass. But check out all of her other shows, of course. The Geek and Sassy and Talk and Pop and Freak Out Drive-In. And of course, check me out on both the wrestling and the pop feeds. Where can we find you on Twitter, dear?
At Jenny Position.
Mm-hmm. Is it... We both changed ours, so is it weird not saying your old one?
It really is, yes. Yeah. I have to
double take.
Yeah.
You can find me at PTB Godfather, and we promote our shows like crazy. So I hope you enjoyed this month of horror. I could talk about horror 12 months out of the year, so trust me, there'll be more horror to come probably after the new year. But here on the Police Nation Pop Feed, we transition from horror to the stars, to outer space, because we are now going to focus on the – earlier in the year, we celebrated the end of one epic movie saga, that of course being the Infinity Saga of the Marvel Cinematic Universe. And then coming up now in about 6 weeks, 7 weeks, we say goodbye to the Skywalker Saga of Star Wars, and there's gonna be plenty of content here on the Pop Feed pertaining to my favorite movie franchise of all time. For Jennifer Smith, I'm Scott Criscolo. Hope you enjoyed it. Turn the lights out, put a candle on, maybe have some candy. Give yourself a good scare. You've earned it.
Network.